going on? Where is the leadership in Washington?
Senator Casey or Senator Harris? Go right ahead, Senator Harris.
Senator Casey.
I'm sorry. I was in and out of a car here.
Oh, okay.
First of all, thanks for having us on. I want to welcome Senator Kamala Harris to Philly. She's been here before to help us Pennsylvania win elections, and we're so grateful to have her with us. We're in a time period now where there are a couple of major challenges we have ahead of us. In the Senate, the major debate will be on, of course, the Supreme Court. And I think, for me, it's a time when the basic choice is, are we going to let the hard right and corporate interest control a third branch of government? We live in a country now where the hard right controls the Congress, because that's what the Republicans decided to do. They decided to throw out the moderates and kick the conservatives out and just let the hard right control everything. And we have a hard right administration that either leads on extreme policies, whether it's a hard right health bill or a hard right tax bill. Now they're trying to get a hard right justice on the Supreme Court. And we can't allow another branch of government to be the captive of the hard right. And I think that's true in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania already understands that the last thing that the people of our state need is another corporate justice on an increasingly corporate court. And I really believe that. I don't think that is in any way an exaggeration. That's the challenge we have ahead of us. And we have to stop them. This isn't a question of negotiating or having a good discussion. We have to win this battle. And of course, it means winning the battle for the Supreme Court and also winning the battle on Election Day.
Welcome to Tony Tennis Show, Bipartisan Voices of the People. I'm Randall Jefferson. The clip you just heard was from July the 13th, 2018, when then Senator Bob Casey was running for re-election, and then Junior Senator Kamala Harris was here in the City of Brotherly Love campaigning for Robert P. Casey. But to our listeners, our call-in number is 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. Our phone lines are now opening. You can also send us your comments via social media. On X, we are at Tone and Tenor. On Instagram, we are at Tone and Tenor Radio. And you can like us on our Facebook page. Just type in the words Tone and Tenor in the Facebook search engine to find us. Our topic today is candidate support. Who's supporting who and why? Will there be backlash? Is support relevant in the upcoming election? Joining us today is the Honorable James Greenwood. He is a Republican who resides in Bucks County here in the state of Pennsylvania. He was elected to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives at the age of 29 in 1980. He served in the House for 6 years and then served for 6 years in PA State Senate. In 1992, he was elected to Congress representing Bucks County, portions of Montgomery County, and Northeast Philadelphia. He served in Congress for 12 years. In 2005, Greenwood left Congress to become president and CEO of the Biotechnological Innovation Organization, the national trade associate for 1,100 biopharmaceutical companies. After 16 years in his role, he joined the DLA Piper Law Firm as chair of the Life Science Policy and Advocacy Group until April of this year. He now serves on the board and consults with several biotech companies. Although a lifelong Republican, he served as chair of the Republicans for Shapiro, that's Governor Josh Shapiro when he was running for governor, and currently is the co-chair of Pennsylvania Republicans for Harris Walsh. Representative Greenwood, thank you for joining the Tone and Tenor Show. How are you today?
No, I'm just fine, thank you. And I'm very delighted to be on your show with you, sir.
Glad that you can be with us. And, let's just get it started. You know, a lot of people are probably saying saying, well, wait a minute, why is a Republican supporting a Democrat? Because, you know, everybody always talks about party, party this, party that. You know, we here always talk about you look for the person, whether they're a Republican, Democrat, Independent, that best serves your needs. So why, as a Republican, you decided to first support now Governor Josh Shapiro and now Harris, Vice President Harris and Walz in their run for the presidency?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? And the answer is, as you just described, for me, the first threshold of trying to decide whom I should support, and I think this should be for most of us, all of us, is fitness for office. Mm-hmm. So when I look at presidential candidates, and frankly, I supported every Republican candidate for president from Richard Nixon on to Mitt Romney. And I had lots of differences with all of those candidates, but they were all on both sides throughout my lifetime. I think our lifetime, both presidential candidates in the general election have been fit for office. You know, they could do the job. Donald Trump is not fit for office. And that's not just an opinion. He is clinically a malignant narcissist and a pathological liar. And I'm not a psychiatrist, but psychiatrists who have observed him for a long time make that conclusion. That syndrome, if you will, means that A, he is incapable of empathy, is incapable of behaving in any way except in his own interest, and he lies and lies and lies to get whatever he wants. And when you have someone who's lying to his own constituents right now, he goes to his rallies and he lies all the time, straight ahead to all of his the people who attend. He lies to the media. He will lie to our allies. He will lie to leaders of the world. And it's just, you just can't have someone in office who would do that. And now I contrast that with Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. who is, in my mind, a mentally healthy human being, unlike Trump, who spends all of his time trying to beat people down, dividing us, depicting America as a failed nation about to go over the cliff. She, on the other hand, is positive. She's joyful. She's a uniter of people. And she actually wakes up every morning and says to herself, what can I do for my country? Something that Donald Trump couldn't do if he tried.
Mm. You know, you live in Bucks County, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Bucks County in the state of Pennsylvania is a purple state. I mean, purple county right now. So it could go either
That's
way.
Right.
How do the folks of Bucks County perceive you as a Republican, those that are on the Republican side, supporting Vice President Harris?
Well, I would say nearly all of my Republican friends, and some of them have left the party, but they're all proud of me, frankly, and they all commend me. I was just at a social event last night with a couple hundred people and got a lot of pats on the back from Republicans, not all of them. They trust me, and they trust me because I've served for 24 years as elected official, and so they trust my judgment. There are those of certainly, and including some people who used to be supporters and contributors to my campaign, who are appalled by what I'm doing. But I'm 73 years old. I'm not going to run for office again. I got nothing to lose. And all I care about is what the world's like when I'm gone from my children and my grandchildren. And so that's what drives me.
You know, you hit the nail on the head. I think a lot of folks are becoming they're not liking all the negativity that's going on, and I'm not just going to say from President Trump, but also the attack ads back and forth. How do we, in these last few days before the election, especially in those states that now have early voting, in Pennsylvania we've already started the mail-in ballot process, how do we get the policy and get people, because a lot of folks, And I don't know whether you see it out in Bucks County, but, you know, I'm not feeling in the Philadelphia County, I'm not feeling, especially among the courted Black and Latino communities, I'm not feeling that they are really, they're lukewarm towards Vice President Harris, but they're also not feeling of President Trump, which puts us in a precarious situation because, you know, I'm one that don't believe in polls. The only poll I believe in is the one on election day, because now we're getting inundated with polls. Today, Vice President Harris is up by a point. Tomorrow, she may be down by a point. Donald Trump may be up in the swing states one day, down in the swing states another day. But these are all polls, and polls can be skewed. How do we get away from that? You know, and people are, you know, the empathy that people are having right now, they're not really feeling this election. And will it make a difference that over 100 Republicans have signed a letter, and plus most of the people that are supporting Vice President Harris are retired or used to work for the Trump administration? Do you think people will buy into Republicans supporting Kamala Harris?
Yeah, well, a lot of questions packed in there. So let me try to take it in some kind of sequence. So first off, the negative ads. You know, it is a sad political fact that all these negative ads work because they're all using negative ads in many cases because they work. They have effect. Donald Trump has never been able to get above 50% favorability. And so it's really difficult for him. People have known him for, you know, all these years, beginning with the 16 campaign. So now that's, you know, it's 8 years of him being around. And they knew him, you know, from TV and so forth beforehand. But it's very difficult for him to get to raise his favorables. So what does he have to do? He has to beat her down. He has to beat Harris down. Now, I watch, because we're such an important state, I see these TV ads all the time. And I will say that Kamala Harris runs negative ads. But to me, the negative ads that she runs are based on the truth. So she points to the fact that Donald Trump denied the election, even though it was a big lie. She points to the fact that he summoned the mob to Washington on January 6th, and then sat in the White House watching TV, watching his thugs beat up the Capitol Police that protected me and every other member of Congress, and were just trying to do their job while they're getting beaten and kicked by his mob, and he did nothing. So, and that's the truth, you know, no hiding that. And so when Kamala Harris shows that, it's a negative ad, but it's the truth. Mm-hmm. And you know, if Barack Obama had done that, they would have tarred and feathered him.
Right? I agree.
But Trump does it, and, you know, his supporters just, you know, cast it aside. She runs negative ads about Trump's position on abortion, but it's true. You know, he is responsible in large measure for women losing a 50-year-old right to of choice. So, but then you look at his negative ads, and they're basically lies. They're saying that she let in, you know, these millions of people as if you know they weren't coming in when he was there. He blames her for the economy, which is not her fault. And so his negative ads are not truthful. They're not accurate. Mm-hmm. And I think that hers are. Now, the other question you asked is, so does it make a difference that a whole bunch of Republicans are supporting Harris, a Democrat? I think it does. And I hope it does. Because, and if you look at history, there has never been in the history of the United States of America a president whose own cabinet, whose own chiefs of staff whose own national security advisors have all said, so many of them have said, he is not fit for office. And that's just never happened before. So, you know, I hope that the people who are undecided or maybe leaning for Trump and not so sure, take that into consideration. I mean, his vice president won't support him. And then you look at the fact that that Kamala Harris's support ranges from Bernie Sanders to Dick Cheney. That's as wide as a political spectrum as you can get. And that has to tell the voters something.
You know, and you hit the nail on the head there. One of the things that I've voted in every election since I was able to vote. You know, and just like I said earlier, I don't tell people who to vote for. And, you know, and I always say here on the show, regardless of party, you have good Republicans, you have bad Republicans. You have good Democrats, you have bad Democrats. But at the end of the day, with all due respect, neither one of these folks will be able to get anything done if they are elected and they don't have the Congress to support them. How many executive orders can you actually sign to run this country? And I think that we're losing out here because a lot of folks don't realize, you know, we're focusing on the presidency, but we're not looking at the effects of what could happen if either one of them win and they have no, it's almost like a football team. If you don't have a supporting cast and you're the quarterback or your line doesn't block for you, then you're going to get sacked. So how does either one of them, and I'm throwing it out for either one, because at this point, we don't know which will win. You know, everyone has their opinion and the polls have their opinions, but how do they get the supporting cast so that the American people, and I think that's the other piece where we're losing out here, is that we're losing out the American people, what the American people, are they really listening to the American people and what they want? Or is it just a select group of people?
Right. So I'll say, first off, when you talk about getting sacked, you bum me out because you reminded me of the last Eagles game when Jalen Hurts got sacked 6 times. We'll put that aside. The fact of the matter is, and I talk to Republicans and they say, oh, yeah, no, I hate Trump. He's awful. He's awful. But I'm a Republican and I can't support Kamala Harris because she's too liberal for me. What I say to them is, look, when this election is over, there are going to be plenty of Republicans in Congress. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Senate flips from Democrat majority to Republican majority, based on the races that are going on right now, and the House could go either way, probably go Democrat. So they'll probably both flip. And so if Kamala Harris is the next president, she will have no choice but to work with both parties. And if you look at the Biden administration, they got a $1 trillion infrastructure bill passed in a bipartisan fashion, mm-hmm. okay? That has created so many jobs all around the country, good jobs. While fixing our bridges and our roads and our ports and our airports and all of that. But she did that by reaching across the aisle. I mean, Biden and she did it. Mm-hmm. They got the CHIPS bill passed, which is to help America take the lead in microchips, which are semiconductors, which are critically important and are going to be more and more important in this age of technology. In a bipartisan fashion. They got a little gun safety passed in a bipartisan fashion. They finally got a bipartisan bill to strengthen security on the border. And then Trump decided to tell his colleagues in the Congress to kill it because he wanted to run on that issue. And he couldn't be running all of these ads if the Congress had actually come together and solved it. So she will have to work, and she can work with both parties. And that means that the legislation that comes to her desk is not going to be left-wing stuff. It's going to have to be things that Republicans and Democrats can agree to together. Now, Having said that, Donald Trump, if he is reelected, elected again, he's not going to be policy focused. First off, he knows practically nothing about policy because he doesn't read, he doesn't learn, he doesn't seek good counsel from his staff. He's going to be focused on getting revenge on the people he feels wronged him. He's going to be focused on getting inflating his ego by hanging out with the likes of Putin and Xi in China and others. And he's probably going to be focused on selling more golden sneakers and Bibles and enriching himself. And he's not going to be policy focused, and he's not going to be thinking of other people. But she will, and she will be running for re-election if she's elected. So she needs to not only get those things done in bipartisan fashion, but she needs to actually try to solve people's problems here in the Philadelphia area and across the country. And I have every confidence that that's what she'll do. Mm.
Hold your last thought. We're going to take a quick break, and we're coming back. Our topic today is candidates support, who's supporting who and why. Will there be backlash? Is support relevant in upcoming election? Our guest today is the Honorable James Greenwood, former U.S. Congressman from the 8th District, and he served Bucks County, portions of Montgomery County, and Northeast Philadelphia.
I know the world won't give me nothing, so I gotta take it. And I know it's a way we can win. Why won't nobody say it? It don't matter where we're from, suburbs or the slums. They don't wanna see us winning. They'd rather keep us dumb. Could have a war, but we don't know how. Don't let them tell you that your vote don't count.
First thing first, you know back in middle school when they taught us it was three branches of the government. We forgot it when we got older. It's the judicial, the legislative, and executive. But all we know is the executive. That's the mayor or the governor and the president. Now none of them three people make no laws. They just be checking them. The laws come to their desk and all they do is say no or yes to it. So when the news station tried to tell us that Barack Obama couldn't put us on, we was all salty at Obama when it was the Congress members all along. We gotta focus on the legislative branch. Yeah, they the ones that make the laws. Yeah, they the ones right how much food stamp money you get on the card. But when people that wanted to help us wanted the job, I know they probably lost. Cause we ain't even know their name, we ain't know their face, we ain't know at all. So the Congress or the State House, that's legislative, they make laws. So what we want from the president is what they do, okay y'all? See, they election every 2 years, but we don't never even go to those. The Congress, they can raise minimum wage, but we ain't even really know it though. So you know how back in 08, when we all voted for Obama, we was all supposed to go back in 2010 and vote for the Congress. Cause they the ones make child support laws, they the ones choose if your kids at school get their...
Senator Harris, you're here now, and there's a lot of things spinning around in your space, one of which is that you're traveling around the country supporting sitting senators because maybe you might want a job promotion somewhere in here. And you're very welcome to announce your presidential candidacy here on the Tony Tennant Show if you'd like. Go right ahead, do that. We appreciate it. But otherwise, speak to us about what's going on out in the nation. But first, that question about the presidency.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the attempt to have that conversation, but I will tell you, truly, 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 we all have got to be focused on what's in front of us right now. And, you know, each day in the life of folks who are experiencing the misdirected and unjust policies of this administration and this time, you know, each day in the life of folks is a very long time, and we cannot waste a moment focused on something in the future when there's so much work to be done today.
Welcome back to Tony Tennant here on WWDB Talk 860 AM and WPEN 97.5. You just heard a clip of then junior senator from California, Kamala Harris, who was also a guest on the Tone and Tenor Show, July 13th of 2018. And, you know, we tried to get her to admit that she wanted that upper office, but now, 6 years later, we are hearing that she is vying for that office. On the line with us is the Honorable James Greenwood. And he's former U.S. Congressman from the 8th District. He served Bucks County, portions of Montgomery County, and Northeast Philadelphia here in Pennsylvania. Our topic is who's supporting who and why. Representative Greenwood, question for you. In the present Congress, I believe we're in the 118th right now, there's a lot of renegades. So will those renegades be able to, if Vice President Harris wins, be able to be reeled in to the fold, or will we have a Congress that we had like this one that only got 2% of bills passed presently, and a lot of them were citations or things like that. Will we be able to see something going forward? Do you foresee that we will be able to move the country forward, or will be still continue to be stagnated?
Well, I think that frankly, the Democrats in Congress will probably be very coherently operating. I think they've demonstrated that they don't have the kind of fissures in their party that the Republicans do. Republicans have these lunatics like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Congressman Gates and Boebert and a handful of others. And you can be sure that if Kamala Harris is president, they will do everything possible to undermine her. And they'll have no interest in allowing her to get anything done. However, I am confident that there will be enough Republicans who actually are there for the purpose of public service, as opposed to whatever, you know, crazy reasons these other people are in Congress. And I think with a unified Democratic, largely unified Democratic Party, and enough well-meaning, moderate, reasonable members of Congress who are not interested in, you know, in being in stardom, but interested in getting things done, that they can move an agenda that's good for everyone in the nation. And I think they'll be able to do that relatively consistently.
Do you think that if, and you know, we've got to keep it even keel, do you think that if President Trump was to win, would he be able to field a cabinet? You know, there's a lot of folks that.
Oh, he'll field a candidate. The issue is this: if the Republicans control the Senate, he will be able to fill the cabinet positions. I think, frankly, those who would be willing to serve in a Trump cabinet will not be of high caliber. I would say that in Trump's term, there were people who served in his cabinet, knowing that he was not a very competent guy, but thinking, well, maybe I can help to steer him, to direct him, to do my part to make something good happen for the country. But so many of them were disgusted with him that I think that the kind of people who would now volunteer for or accept a nomination from him to be a cabinet officer will not be first-class people. And then, of course, you know, he has this notion through this Project 2025 to just try to wipe out a whole band of people in the executive branch of government who are longtime career servants, public servants, and replace them with his, you know, people who are of his ilk, who believe in him. And that would be, you know, that would amplify the damage that he can do to the country.
Well, let's really think about it. He tried that in his first go round when he, what's the woman's name? Vince McMahon's wife, when he put her in the cabinet and several other folks into his cabinet.
Oh, Elaine Chao?
Yeah, and they didn't last. They saw who he was, and I believe he thought he was still acting, you know. And basically, as he said in one of his interviews, he said that the difference between his administration and the Biden administration was that he wasn't scared to fire people. That doesn't make sense. How do we make sense out of that? Because if he starts firing everyone, if he was to win, then the country will be in chaos. Am I correct?
Yeah. Well, Yeah, and you know what Trump will say is, you know, when we have all these people like Bolton and Barr and all of Kelly and McMaster, all these people who left or he fired them. He fired people because they were willing to do what's right and they weren't just doing whatever he wanted them to do. And so he's asked, why are all these people who served you turned against you? He goes, well, because they were no good and they were stupid and I had to fire them. That's not the case at all. You know, like at Rex Tillerson, who was CEO of, what was it, ExxonMobil or something. He ended up saying Trump's the biggest effing moron in the world. And, you know, the people who were closest to Trump are the ones who are most critical. Now, what I am critical about most of them, like Bolton and others, they say, oh, we're not going to vote for Trump, not going to vote for Trump. But, oh, no, we can't vote for Harris. Well, wait a minute. Is your political purity more important than the fate of the country? If you know, and all these guys do, you know that Trump is unfit for office, incompetent, ignorant of policy. You know he should not be president. Then it's either going to be he or it's going to be she. And if you're not, you know, you don't have the character to stand up like Liz Cheney did and say, and I'm voting for Kamala Harris, and her father did, Dick Cheney, then, you know, it's just weakness and cowardice, I think, to not be able to make what is really a binary choice in favor of this country.
So how do we, moving forward, how do we energize? I mean, both candidates are courting the Black and Latino votes. But what, let me step back for a second. What is the fact? We continue to talk about Vice President Kamala Harris, and we continue to talk about President Donald J. Trump, former president. But what will the effect of, you know, if we're, like you said, Bolton, all of them not saying they can vote for Vice President Harris, what about those that may, you have third-party candidates such as Jill Stein, you have those folks out there. What effect will they have on either one of them possibly winning the presidency?
Yeah, well, so of course, no, these third party candidates like Jill Stein and a couple of others, I know Cornel West is maybe on some ballots, I don't know, but voting for a third party candidate, you might as well just stay asleep on election day. It's a waste of a vote, total waste of a vote. They're not going to be president. And you know, the libertarian candidate isn't going to be president. And so, you know, again, it's just like, you know, I'm going to be so pure, I don't like either one of them, so I'm going to vote for a third party. Mm-hmm. You know, wake up. It's going to be one or the other. You know, choose one. And in my mind, it's not even close. Mm-hmm. It's not even close between this madman and Kamala Harris, who is just, you know, I love her. I just think she's great. You watch her work a crowd, and they make fun of her smile and her laugh, but it's genuine. It's authentic. She's a good person. And she means well, and she's got more experience than Trump did because she was a district attorney. She was attorney general. She was a senator. She's vice president. It's just not close. So, you know, anybody who's thinking about voting for third party candidate, you know, please don't throw away your vote. I mean, just that's what you're doing. You're throwing it away.
And what we really need to emphasize that you make the point, make your vote, but make a conscious decision. You know, we're not telling you who to vote for. We're not telling you how to vote, but vote in your conscience that who will do the best job for you, for your families, and for the country, and for the state and cities that you live in. You know, far after elections, people are forgotten. You know, the folks court your vote for a couple years, and then once they get in the office, they now have the power. You know, how will we continue, whether it's Donald Trump, whether it's Vice President Harris, how do we, as the American people that put these folks in office, begin to hold their feet to the fire? Because that's what's lacking. And how, you know, people, are, and a lot of people are saying, oh, they're going to do what they want to do anyway once they get in there. So either I'm not going to vote or I'm just going to stay home. How do we convince these folks to make that decision to go out there and vote? I know we're like 28 days or 25, something like that out, but there's a lot of folks that still are undecided. And how are you, as the co-chair here in Pennsylvania, going out there trying to get the folks to make those conscious decisions and to get out the vote? Because I'm not seeing it in Philadelphia. I'm not really seeing it.
Well, so your question of how do we keep their feet to the fire? It's true that when someone's elected president, it's not like you're going to pick up the phone and call the president, right? You're not going to, you know, you can send a letter to the president, but, you know, they get trillions of letters, and they're all, the presidents don't see those letters. They have staff that respond to those letters. But everyone has a member of Congress. And if you live in the Philadelphia district, in Philadelphia City, with any of the collar counties, you have a member of Congress who represents you. And they, you can pick up the phone and talk to them. You can visit them. You can contact them. You can email them and ask, you know, tell them what your needs are. They want to get reelected and they want to serve. And so you can influence a policy that way. And, you know, when I was in Congress for 12 years, if somebody, anybody who ever called my office and said, can we come in and talk to the congressman? The answer was, yeah. They all came in, they sat and they talked and they told me their problems, and we worked to solve their problems, or we worked to advance their issues if we agreed with their positions. So it's, I think people reluctant to do that, a lot of them, because they really don't think that it's possible. But I think people will be surprised to know that your members of Congress can carry your message to the White House.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing this from a former congressman. You do have a voice. You just have to use it. Hold them to so that they can move your agenda forward, because you actually hired these folks. And you have the right to fire them. You know, unfortunately, speaking of that, Congressman, what are your thoughts on age limits for the presidency and term limits for Congress?
Yeah, well, let's take them in reverse order. So term limits for Congress. I know where that notion comes from. The people become career politicians and you can't get them out, and they become unresponsive because, you know, they're in so long and people know them and so forth. But the fact of the matter is, when you're a member of Congress, there are 435 members of Congress, and there are thousands and thousands of issues, and they're all complex, every one of them, and they wouldn't be before the Congress. And so members of Congress, based on their committee assignments, their subcommittee assignments, their geography of their districts and so forth, specialize in certain issues. And other members of Congress look to them sometimes because they're the expert on hospitals or the expert on labor unions or expert on climate change or so forth. And so when you're there, the longer you're there as a member of Congress, if you're a conscientious, good member of Congress, the more expertise you develop, the more experience you have. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem in my mind is not that we should have term limits, because what a term limit basically says is we might have the greatest congressman in the world, but he or she has served for six terms and now they have to leave. Even though we don't want them to leave, we're happy with them. Now you can't vote for him anymore. But what the problem is, that is campaign finance. Okay, the fact is that when you're incumbent, you have access to so much more money than the challenger does. And when I challenged a seven-term incumbent back in 1992, I challenged him to say, "Look, let's agree not to take any political action money, any PAC money, and let's put a cap on what we're going to spend. Of course, he rejected that because he was getting all the PAC money.
Mm-hmm.
But when I did get to Congress, I said, I'm not going to take any PAC money. There was only a few of us in Congress. I don't know if there's any now who do that. I didn't want any special money, special interest money. And people said, what, are you crazy? And Newt Gingrich, you know, I was on the Energy and Commerce Committee, and he helped me get on the Energy and Commerce Committee, which is a big money committee. There's so many interests there that you could just rake in the PAC money. And he said, well, I put you on that committee, and now you're not taking any money. And my answer is, you know what? All the PAC money in the world can't buy me the confidence of the voters the way not taking the money does. And so my voters knew they may agree with me on a position or they may disagree on a position, but they didn't have to worry that I took the position based on how much money some interest gave me or some, you know, which interest gave me what money. So I was always an advocate of campaign finance reform, limiting the amount of doing away with political action committees would have been fine with me, limiting the money that can flow in, because that's what keeps incumbents that are not worthy of the job anymore, or gotten sloppy and lazy, that allows them to stay in. So I think that that's the real solution to the problem.
Hmm. Yeah.
But, and then you also asked about age limit for the presidency. That's a tough one, I think. I was a big Biden's. I really was. I raised $2 million for him when he ran in 2020. I campaigned with him here in Bucks County. I organized 36 former Republican members of Congress to support him. But when he ran in 2020, he sort of, because of his age, he said, well, I'm going to be a transition president. And everybody took that to mean he wasn't going to seek a second term. Mm. And frankly, he should not have sought a second term. As soon as that he had that terrifically awful debate performance, the next day a campaign called me and said, what do you think? I said, he has to. And I said, I don't care if he never makes another misstatement or has another episode like that. That's going to be on videotape forever, and Trump will use it in the campaign. So he has to step out. And frankly, I wasn't at all sure that I thought that Kamala Harris should be the candidate.
Right.
Because her favorable ratings were very low, maybe lower than Joe's were. I was hoping that you know, Josh Shapiro, of whom I'm, you know, very fond and for whom I have great respect, I thought he would have been a great candidate. But, you know, once she came in and, you know, came to Philadelphia, I was there when she and Waltz came into Philadelphia for that rally.
Mm-hmm.
It's just electric. And she has generated so much enthusiasm. I think that enthusiasm is going to be key to her opportunity to win this election.
One of the last things that we're going to talk about.
I didn't answer the question. So I think that when someone is too old and infirm to be president anymore, they shouldn't run. But I'm not really a great fan of age limit. But you would think that the voters in the primaries would say, you know what, that person's too old. Let's vote for a challenger in the primary.
Right, but then if you don't know who that person is, and you know, some folks go by the saying, well, we know what we have with him or her,
yeah.
And they deal with that, and so then you see what happened with President Biden. You know, he made missteps in that debate, and all hallelujah broke loose. And it took a while for him to pivot out. You know, folks like you, folks like President Barack Obama, Nancy Pelosi had to get into his ear before it became too late. And I think that's one of the things that frustrated President Trump, because he was geared up to take on Joe Biden and was looking forward to those missteps. And now you have a young, energetic person coming in and changing the mindsets of some people and have a fresh new look on what could be if she was to be elected. And what couldn't be if he was elected.
So you know, I was at a social event last night and talking to a Republican I've known forever. And I told him I was supporting Harris, and he was, of course, you know, absolutely unbelievable. Couldn't believe that I would do that. And I couldn't believe he would vote for Trump. And he said, well, you know, Kamala Harris came in on a coup. And, you know, came in on a coup. You know, if anybody tried to pull a coup, it's Donald Trump on January 6th. She came in because Joe Biden became convinced that he should step down. He couldn't have been forced out. He was the nominee, but against his, you know, his wishes, understandably, he became convinced because a lot of wise people told him, Joe, if you know, you need to step down, and he did it as a patriot for his country. Mm-hmm. And then she stepped up to the plate, and God bless both of them for the decisions to do that.
You know, one of the things that we're seeing is, and maybe you can take it back to some folks, is that the smaller media outlets, especially the actual black-owned newspapers that are in the communities, and those small media outlets that are in the communities are not getting any favorable response from the comp directors of either party. And, you know, they want you to print their press release, but they don't want to spend dollars with the struggling black-owned news media, but they're not engaged. But they can spend their money big time in the major media places. But these community papers are the ones that are touching the community, that know the community, know the people, and they are getting frustrated across the nation because they're not seeing anything, especially here in Pennsylvania. I know a young lady that owns a paper and she's in Chester County. Her paper's in Bucks. It goes across to Camden. It goes, but when they contact their folks, you know, it's, I'll get back to you, you know, but the ads and everything are going to the major papers. And these small community papers are being left out. I mean, if you have anybody's ear,
yeah, that's a mistake.
I'm sorry for swing somebody's ear because it's frustrating.
That's a mistake. That's a mistake. They should be investing in those papers, and not just asking for the free op-ed. You know, to have their ads printed. It's not a lot of money. And it buys goodwill, and it helps those papers, as you suggested. And as we all know, the community newspapers are just going, you know, they're all fighting for their lives. Mm-hmm. The event that I was at last night was a fundraiser for the local newspaper called the Bucks County Herald, because we want to keep that community paper here. And the community has come together and actually raised money to keep that paper going. I was trying to remember the name of the black-owned paper in Philadelphia. It was years ago that I used to visit all the time and talk to his editor.
Scoop. And then there's...
What was it?
Scoop. And then there's... I forgot the other one. Jerry Mondesire used to work for Congressman Bill Gray. But Scoop is the actual... She publishes digital as well as... her newspaper twice a week.
The one I'm thinking of may have gone out of business by now already.
There was Tyree Johnson, who was West Philly. He came from the Inquirer. He was an investigative reporter. But, you know, these are things, you know, I'm hearing you just, and it would be nice, you know, that maybe after this, or maybe we can connect you and Sheree Darden and, you know, and the folks in Bucks County to see how these local newspapers can, going forward, can get these campaign dollars, because it's not a lot of money. They're not asking for millions of dollars for TV ads. They're asking for you to put in an ad so that the community can learn who you are and what you're doing.
And it's in their interest to do it.
Unfortunately, you know, we get these, a lot of these folks have hired these you know, everybody believes that social media is supposed to be, they have the young people now. Social media is the end all, the be all, and that's what they're using. And I think that's hurting the smaller media, smaller outlets.
Yeah. Too bad.
Yeah. We're up against the time. Is there anything you'd like to say? Can you keep us abreast of what's going on? Send us information, and we can connect you with them so that they know what's going on in Pennsylvania with the Republicans for Harris, and keep it moving and see what comes out come November 5th. Well, November 6th.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to chat with you. I've enjoyed this conversation. Happy to chat with you whenever you like. I guess the message that I want to give people is, I don't know if you saw Barack Obama's speech out in Pittsburgh last night, but it was a rip roarer. Mm-hmm. But he said, get off your couch, put down your phone, and get out and vote. And, I understand people who say, well, Barack Obama came in and my life didn't change that much. And, so they all make promises. They all come in and beg for a vote and then they go away.
Yep.
And I understand that sentiment, but, if you don't vote, you got no reason to complain afterwards. If you do vote, at least you said, hey, look,
we were up there, engineers playing our music.
I took the effort.
I just want to thank you, James Greenwood, former congressman of the 8th District, for joining us. We want to thank our engineer today, Tyler. And listeners, follow us on social media. We are at Tone and Tenor on X. On Instagram, we are at Tone and Tenor Radio. You can follow us on Facebook. Just type in Tone and Tenor in the Facebook search engine to find us. I'm Randall Jefferson. Again, thank you to the Honorable James Greenwood, Republican, former U.S. Congressman of 8th District, for joining us today.
Well, if you do, it's time to wake up your mind. We can make it better, and I know it might take some time, but we gotta start somewhere. How about with you and me? From us it goes to others, then we'll have our unity.